Your knees are shot. Your back is wrecked. The docs are handing you pills and just send you home. Does that sound familiar? Chris Searles lived it. He was a sniper in Iraq. He lost half his team just days before they were supposed to fly out. He came home crushed, both physically and mentally. The Army med-boarded him. The VA handed him painkillers. And he said, screw that. He found something that actually worked. Stem cell therapy, hyperbaric oxygen therapy, without the pills or surgery. And now he's using the knowledge that he gained to help other veterans take back their lives through his organization, Overwatch 6. We're going to talk about all that in just a minute. Before we get into it, though, I want to take a moment to raise awareness for something deeply important to our community, the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. This organization is working to build a permanent national memorial in Washington, D.C. to honor the service members, families, and civilians impacted by the global war on terrorism. This memorial will serve as both a tribute to those who served and as a way to ensure that their sacrifices are recognized and remembered for generations to come. If you'd like to learn more or find out how you can support their mission, visit GWATMemorialFoundation.org. Now let's get into today's episode. Chris, welcome to the show. I'm really excited to have you here and want to talk about the work that you're doing over at Overwatch 6. But before we get into all of that, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, military history, all that kind of stuff, to kind of just get things started.
Well, thanks for having me, man. You got a pretty awesome story yourself, and I'm looking forward to digging a little bit more. And I have a few things I'd like to learn about you, so
it's maybe a two-way. Yeah, this could be a two-way thing. This is cool.
Yeah. Well, and thank you for all the work you're doing out there. Also, thank you for everything you're doing. I was just that typical kid, grew up farmland of Illinois. You know, it's cornfields, soybean fields. I had a pretty strong military family to World War, I think back to the Revolutionary War, I believe. I got a bit further in, but yeah, but it's what I do know for sure, I had a grandfather who was the first wave Utah Beach. As a combat engineer, made it 5 days into the war and got taken hostage by German, you know, so he's German POW for months. And he was in such bad shape when we came across the Eastern Front and they, you know, freed the hostages. They just sent him back to the States and he was pretty much done for, you know, just so emaciated. But I got to see his POW tag last year. That was kind of cool to dig into the family history. That was fascinating.
Yeah.
And then I have an uncle who was Air Force Colonel, Vietnam, retired out of the Pentagon, air traffic control guy, right? Good man, good friend. And then my dad was a Green Beret in the Vietnam era, never deployed, thankfully, but you know, it was right up to that last minute when Nixon said, I think it was Nixon, said, we're getting out of here. He was one of the first ones to say, oh, I don't, this Army thing isn't for me.
Yeah, sure.
We did the service for a few years anyway. And then I joined. I always wanted to join. Like I said, typical farm kid with, you know, ADHD and didn't belong in school and always in trouble. Typical story.
Yeah.
And finally joined after 9/11 and went straight in the infantry. ID went to Fort Carson. That was a great place to serve and work. Beautiful area, beautiful post. Was deployed into the initial invasion of Iraq. Was there for that year. That was pure hell. Living conditions were cruel. Got to work with some great guys, awesome people, did some tough work. And then came back. I always wanted to be a sniper. I grew up reading every sniper book there was about Vietnam, World War II. I wanted to be a Green Beret and Delta Force more than anything. I was trying to head that way. And then got back from that tour and obviously needed more snipers. The military needed more. So we started putting schools together and I got selected to go, made it through all the pre-selection stuff. And it was all in Fort Carson. They brought the train to us in a mobile training team type of thing.
Okay.
Which was good. We got to train in our backyard and our crazy winds and our mountainous environments and work and train with your people that you then build a team with.
Sure.
It's worked out pretty well. I ended up going to school with some great guys, but my sniper buddy was an Olympian. He was a 96 Olympic field hockey team captain, Lawrence Amar. Great guy. I mean, like stud of a man. And so I was fortunate to have him. We went through school, did great. Everything was fine. Then we started building a platoon, spent 2 years building a platoon together, which is a great experience. I had some ups and downs in that, like, you know, anything in the military. And then I redeployed eventually in 06. Did a whole year over there, about a year. I missed the first couple of months due to a shoulder surgery I had to have. We had that deployment. That was in Bakuba, which is kind of between Iraq and, or between Baghdad and the Iranian border. Okay, a pretty big hotbed in there.
Sure.
Pretty crazy deployment. A lot of casualties, a lot of injuries. A lot of our guys got injured. Eventually ended up getting, well, let's get to that point. That's where we were hunting Zarqawi. Do you remember Vanel Zarqawi?
Yeah.
We were hunting that guy for quite a bit. And, of course, all the other HVTs and all the other, you know, the bad guys in that area.
Yeah, my brother was in Ramadi around that time period, and I remember him talking about that as well. Just being one of those things you have to be on the lookout for, you know?
Yeah, he was a bad dude. Bad dude. And turns out he was in RAO the whole time. Not the whole time, but we ended up killing him 2 clicks down the road from our FOB.
Oh, wow.
They dropped a bomb on him when the task force was hunting him, and we were pretty much QRF for the task force and helped out anywhere we could. But, and then I'll just tell you the story because it's kind of a cool historical point, actually. As I get older, I learn about being part of history. It's kind of cool to tell the story.
Yeah, sure.
We just came back from like a multi-night sniper op. We were up for 2-3 days straight doing whatever and came back, and our commander was like, all right, you guys take a couple days off, downtime, recoup. And this is a big brigade size FOB. This is a pretty well set up FOB. So plenty of easy weather conditions. We weren't pulling security and having to do our own log pack and our own missions and everything else we had to do in that first tour. We were our own entity out in the middle of nowhere, northern Iraq that first time. But so we were able to have that downtime and rest and relax. So we bedded down, and then that was kind of late afternoon. They woke us up in the middle of the night and said, you guys got to go. You got to go. The task force is in contact. Bring grenades, bring MREs, bring body bags. It's like, just load up with everything you got and go to this grid. And so, you know, but in those days, you had to get cleared to leave the FOB. You can't just fly out of the gate like we did in the first OIF one. It was like the Wild West. This time we had more security
more
things.
Rules. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so we get to the gate and we're all amped up, ready to go. You know, like, holy shit, this is no joke. And they're like, all right, stand here, stand down at the gate. So we're waiting at the gate, And then we all like eventually passed out on the trucks, just waiting. And then the sun comes up and we're all like, what's going on here? Like, what? This is odd. And finally, like, hey, you guys go to this grid, pick up these four guys. Like, okay. So we pull on the hardball, drive like 2 clicks down the road, make a drive, kind of an offshoot, down this dirt road along this canal and into like this giant palm grove area. And there's like army bulldozers out there and all kinds of military folks staying around and a big freighter and debris everywhere. I'm like, man, what's going on here? And we get out and kind of do our thing, look around. It's obviously a secured area. Everybody's just kind of hanging around. And there's these four guys that all have beards and brand new uniforms, like M4s that just came out of a case. Like, they've never seen bird, you know, like these, none of these guys have no tags, none of that stuff. And I'm like, hey, you guys, and our platoon name was Predator Platoon. So I'm like, hey, you guys looking for a ride from Predator Platoon? They're like, yeah. You guys going back to the brigade? Well, yeah, wherever you need to go, we'll take you there. And so we had four trucks. We put one guy in each truck and we'd get in and go turn around to drive back out where we came in. And I drove everywhere. I was an E6 and I still drove everywhere. I didn't trust anybody to drive.
I just
everything in the railroads, spotting stuff, IEDs and whatnot. So I went back up the truck and I turn around and the guy's sitting in the right rear seat. I'm like, hey, man, what's going on? Just trying to make small talk, and he wouldn't talk to me. It was like, man, are you even in the army? Like, even four cars, like, even for the ID, like, he wouldn't say anything. Are you even in the army? He wouldn't say anything. And my gunner turns, you know, rotates the turret, full security, and his foot bumps into this bag. All these guys are carrying like brown paper bags, like grocery bags, okay. And they're carrying them like footballs. Like their M4s are behind him, and they're carrying these bags like for their lives. And my gunner bumps that bag, and the dude flips out. It's like, hey, don't touch that. So I lost, and I was like, you don't talk to my soldier that way. I don't care who you are. I don't talk to my people like that. You don't come in here and not even like say hello.
Yeah, right.
So anyways, we just, drove 2 clicks back to the FOB, dropped him off, and then finally got, like, all right, you guys go ahead, bed down, lay down, whatever. Now you can recover for a couple of days. Like, all right, cool, thanks. We pass out in the middle of the day, and they wake us up again. I'm like, Jesus Christ, what's going on here? And they read us the memorandum that they just killed Zarqawi. And they dropped the bomb on him, and da da da, this is the mission you took part, blah, 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 blah. And we're like, okay, can we go back to bed? Like, whatever. So, as time has gone on, I've started to hear and read the books about what went on chasing that guy and hunting that guy. And it was like, oh, I guess that's my part. Our original mission was our snipers were going to set up a perimeter around his little mini base he had there. I know. And when the task force came in to do the assault, we were going to be there to kill anybody that ran, essentially. And one of our scouts were killed that night, hit an IED and was killed. And so they, because of kind of the threat area, the threat level in that area, they stood the task force down and just dropped a bomb on them.
Okay. And well, that'll get the job done.
Yeah. So
That's why there was a giant crater when you showed up, right?
Yeah, and a bulldozer. I'm like, why is there a bulldozer out there in the middle? What's going on right here? None of this made sense with any of the kind of operation you're doing. Like, what is going on here? So as I'm sure you know, after that, things just got crazy.
Sure, yeah.
And I think that's after that, they blew up that the mosque in Samarra, that golden mosque.
Okay.
It was one of their big holy sites for that sect, that area of Iraq. I guess that's the Sunnis. And they blew up their place. And so that huge hornet's nest, and things just got crazy, and our area got way worse. And we were constantly engaged with the enemy, and IEDs and ambushes and sniper operations and QRF to help out everybody else that's engaged with the enemy. And it was how I explain it is everything I hoped war would be. I wanted to be in all that stuff. And so I got to experience everything it had to offer. It's pretty wild. So anyways, we're coming to the end of the deployment, and we're down a few guys. Lawrence Amar, the Olympian, ended up having he had a stroke in the middle of the firefight one night. We were implanting IEDs that could be tracked. Like they would make IEDs that we would then go and place in enemy territory, and they would pick them up and go use them, and then you could track them and kind of establish raids off of that, go hunting the bad guys off of where they have that thing stored. So we were implanting one of those one night, and we dropped off that team and then pulled a few blocks down in the middle of the city, and we rolled into an ambush. It wasn't an ambush. It was the bad guys just got done lighting up an Iraqi army base, and we were in the middle of them coming back from that. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So we got lit up like 360 up to like 3-story buildings all around us. That was fun. So we were like, all right, get your people. Let's get out of here. So we wrapped up Amar's team, and we pull up to extract them. And I'm on the turret laying down suppressive fire, and the guys come running out of the shadows, and they all jump in the trucks. And I'm like, where's Amar? I'm like, I don't know. He's right behind us. And so I'm looking, I'm like, where is this guy? And he finally comes up, and I could see through my night vision that he was like physically exhausted. Like I could see sweat coming down his face from like, man, something's not right here. And I see him trying to open the door of the Humvee. He's like, hardly had the energy to open the door. And he finally finds a spot where they just like grabbed him and pulled him into the truck, and we hauled us out of there. And so, it is in a firefight. It takes hours to come down off that adrenaline rush.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in like middle of the night. So we go back, we're playing video games, whatever. And my buddy and my bunk was like, I'm gonna go check on Amar. Goes back, and he's like, Amar's gone. He's like disappeared. He's not there. So he goes to the aid station and find out they'd med flighted him to the Baghdad hospital. because they could tell something else, you know, was more severe going on. And backing up a couple of months, he had Bell's palsy where like half your face goes numb, you know, where he lost. Okay. So he, like, I don't know where he got half his face goes numb, and they just kept him in the fight. He's like, oh, you're fine. You're good.
Really? Really? I wouldn't expect IDs. That.
Yeah. Well, 2006, like, they were just starting to pull us up, right? If you got hit with an IED, you get like a couple of days to stand down because of the concussion. Yeah. You know, like when before it was
they,
like whatever.
They needed the bodies, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So let's fast forward a little bit to it. Like, how did you get involved with Overwatch 6? Where did this kind of evolve from? And you know, where did you come up with this idea? And you know, tell us a little bit about the organization.
Well, a few different things. So just to finish that story, ended up...
Sure.
And I'll wrap it up in 30 seconds. We were undermanned. We were getting ready. We were heading home, and our platoon was tasked with escorting all battalion convoy worth of crap going to Balad Air Base, all the connexes and all that stuff. So we escorted that, and we were literally guys standing in line to get on helicopters to fly out. Three of our guys said, hey, we'll help you. You're undermanned. We'll man up a truck and go. So those four guys manned up a truck, escorted the convoy on the way back. That truck gets hit with an EFB, kills three out of the four guys that were all going home the next day. These are all the guys that built a platoon with and trained. It was actually my whole team. I was just I was gunning for the platoon leader at the time. And so everybody but the driver was killed, and they're all going home the next day. So that left a mark for sure.
Yeah.
On me. So I had a lot of back problems leading up to that tour and then through that tour. So I got back and started digging into my spine, and it turns out I had a crushed vertebrae and three blown discs. And so the Army's like, you're done. Med board you. And I was not good. I was very angry. Had a lot of anger issues, a lot of just anger from that whole thing. I was home.
Yeah.
3 days later, I was home. I've got moms and dads and brothers and sisters with cameras in my face, and they're all want to know what happened to their brothers and sons and everything. And so I was very angry. Never got to go back and finish the fight, I guess. So I ended up getting med boarded and started having a lot of back problems. Ended up moving up here to Wyoming, and my wife and I bought land and just built our own house, two of us. And could hardly stand up. You had to crawl out of bed. Just, you know, over the years, back starts getting worse. And I was not about to have surgery. Very anti-surgery, very anti-pills and drugs and all that stuff the VA gives us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was listening to Joe Rogan one day, and he's talking about stem cell therapy in his neck. I was like, well, that's what I got. I got jacked up discs. Maybe I can do this stem cell thing. So I found a guy in Park City, Utah, Seri Clinic, Dr. Adelson, if anybody wants to check him out, who works with a lot of vets. He's been doing it since the 90s, doing stem cell stuff. And I talked to him, and I was very reassured by his knowledge of the spine, his background in stem cell therapy. And he's like, I think I can help you. So I wrote that this is all cash pay. So we wrote him a check and paid for it. And what he did was, back then, this was 17, they drilled into your iliac crest in your hip, pulled out bone marrow, and then liposuction on your love handles, suck the fat out, and they mix all that up, and they get this good quality stem cell stuff comes out of that. And so it helped me. It changed my life. And I was able to, you know, get back into building. I was doing a lot of search and rescue stuff at that time. Very active in that, in the mountains out here in the West. And I was able to perform better. I was able to start getting into hunting and biking and more active. And I was like, man, this stuff works. Wow. So fast forward, about 4 or 5 years. This is now about that 20-year mark where all my buddies are starting to retire. The wars are over. They've hit their 20-year mark. All these infantry and special ops guys are wrecked. And I'm like, well, stem cells work. And this doesn't lead to surgery. You don't have to have pills, which can lead to addiction, which can lead to suicide. I'm going to start a nonprofit to fund stem cell therapy. No one else is doing this. So Overwatch 6 is sniper Overwatch. You're watching over your buddies. And then 6, I got your back.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And
excellent.
I don't have really any skills other than the military and search and rescue stuff. So I can't. So I always had a bunch of guys around here wanting me to teach them how to shoot from the sniper world. I was like, all right, you're going to pay for it. I don't want your money, but you're going to donate money to my nonprofit. So I teach, I put on these shooting events. I've only done a couple. I'm just getting started. But I put on these shooting events to those that want to pay. And that fee is essentially a donation, whatever, that I then use to help veterans and first responders with. I now call it advanced healthcare, like beyond what the VA can give us, beyond a pill, beyond a surgery. And I've done a couple of shooting events. The last one last year was a runway shoot. I have access to a mile and a half long private runway out here in a huge ranch in the western Wyoming area. And I bring in other snipers and special ops guys that have a background in teaching and working with civilians. We're not training Delta Force SEAL Team 6. We're training the civilians that want to know how to shoot better.
Okay.
So you got to be able to work with civilians. So the fee that they pay us, why then use to go on and help? And they have a fun time. We get to have fun hanging out with each other, shooting guns, teaching people, having a good time. It's like a win-win. And that's now grown to more on the mental health side with veterans talking to veterans. Mm-hmm. So I got involved with that about this time last year. And as I'm sure you can relate, you get tired of hearing about all the suicides in your community and your buddies. It's never ending. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, I'm either going to do something about this or I'm going to like turn off all my phone and everything. I don't want to hear about this anymore.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, I have this nonprofit that I thought I could do something with. And maybe I could empower that to help fund additional work. And I went through a program in Denver called the Marcus Institute for Brain Health.
Okay.
It's a three-week outpatient program that focuses on PTS and TBI all at once. I don't think we have the time to really get into it.
Okay.
But it's a phenomenal program. It changes lives and it fixes the problem. It's not Band-Aid. It's you live there for 3 weeks and you do physical therapy, like Formula One level stuff with the vestibular balance and the cognitive work and the and all that crazy weird work with EMDR therapy. We even do a day of equine therapy. You are taught nutrition. You're taught how to cook, yoga, speech and language therapy for that frontal lobe TBI stuff. You do art therapy, which is kind of empowering that or using the power of vulnerability to really get in there deep and work on yourself. Sure. And you do this half with your buddies, like a cohort of like four or five, six of you, and half by yourself. So maybe an hour you're alone, the next hour you're with the buddies, an hour you're...
Okay.
Well, it's no joke, man. It's no freaking joke.
Well, it seems like that's a pretty all-encompassing, you know, all the things that you're talking about there. And it is something that probably a lot of guys, I mean, they probably just don't even know that these things exist. I mean, all of the stuff that you just were talking about, and including the stem cell stuff, I had actually heard Joe Rogan talking about that on his podcast. So I'm familiar with it in that, you know, it did help him with his neck issues and stuff. But, you know, I'm sitting here, you know, as a veteran wondering, you know, how accessible is that? Is this something that is it readily available? Could the VA do this type of stuff? Or, you know, those are the questions I had after, hearing that. But, you know, here you are, and I'm glad we got to connect, but here you are, and we now know that, you know, you guys help facilitate some of that stuff. And so that's great. And, you know, learning a little bit about, you know, where do the stem cells even come from? And it's like coming from yourself. So I think that's even better, right?
Yeah, on the stem cells front. So I did another round last May. So this time last year, I did a round at my knees and shoulders. And those are umbilical cord stem cells. So you're getting 9 months old. I could go harvest the umbilical cord and then harvest the stem cells. And then that's, I mean, it's a lot of money. It was, I think, close to $20,000 for knees and shoulders.
One
injection in each. Yeah, that's no joke. But you're getting 9 month old stem cells. Mm-hmm. And my shoulders are pretty bad. And now they're great. Like, I noticed a huge improvement. And like any ground pounder, your knees are wrecked. You know it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And my knees got better, but it's going to take more. But I'm thinking 10, 20 years from now that I'm trying to avoid a knee replacement.
Sure.
So if I can regrow the cartilage and soft tissue I have to prevent that problem 10 years from now, why not invest in yourself now? So it's $20,000. How much do people buy for a new car?
Yeah, right.
How much they like around here, snowmobiles are a new thing every year. It's 20 grand. You know, some people pay 20 grand to come out here and hunt. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, where are your priorities?
And right. And that bodies. quality of life that you get from not being in pain constantly, barely being able to get out of bed, not being able to do the outdoor things or physical things that you want to do, all of those things just kind of produce a worse quality of life if you're not able to do all of those things. And, you know, at the end of the day, does that 20 grand, what is that going to buy you? I mean, it's going to have to buy you a car at least, because you're not going to be able to walk anywhere.
Yeah.
Or ride a bike or anything like that. You know, you're going to need some sort of transportation at that point, but even still, you know, yeah, sure. I completely understand. 20 grand is a lot of money, and yeah, people are going to have to figure out ways to come up with that money, whether it's financing it or something. But, you know, those options are available, and you can do that the same way you would invest in a car. You'd figure out a way to get that money, you know, through financing arrangements or whatever. You can get that money, and, you know, even if you don't have 20 grand sitting in your bank account right now, you can still figure out a way to get that money and then, you know, pay it off over time, obviously. But think about the quality of life increase that you'll have by doing that now versus waiting 10 years. And then what did you do with those 10 years that sort of got, I don't want to say wasted, but you didn't live them up to their fullest potential anyways, right?
Yeah, you nailed it, man. Very well said. There are financial vehicles out there that can help you make that happen. If you know, I mean, you can't just get the shots and expect you're good. You have to change your lifestyle. You got to, sure, you know, stop the drinking and the smoking. You got to eat healthier. You got to work out. It's not a magic pill, but it's accountability. If you're going to fund $20,000 for your own self, you're going to do what it takes to get the most out of your money.
Yeah, so, sure.
You know, it's the more you put in, the more you get out of it, type of thing. And then when you do feel good and you are doing those activities again, what does that do for your mind? When you are able to get outside and you are able to be productive, whether it's hunting or mountain biking or rock climbing, whatever it is, playing with your kids. I'm 47 and I have 6-year-old twins. I want to be able to play with them and take them out doing the crazy stuff, you know, 10, 15 years from now. So I got to think that way. That's that return on the investment, mental capital that you're investing in today to provide in the future. And then how many guys do you know are addicted to pills, or they get a surgery and they get all the concoctions of pain pills, and then they have a hard time getting off the pills and they start drinking?
Yeah.
And what does that end up? Where does that lead to?
Nothing good. I mean, it's just a recipe for disaster. And, you know, when you were just talking about, you know, kids and things along those lines, you know, when you think about that investment that we're just talking about, you're investing in yourself. You're also investing in your kids and the other relationships that you have, because, you know, for example, with kids, being able to go out in the yard and throw a ball around or run around and play and kind of horse around with them. If you're in extreme pain, you're that's the last thing on your mind. You're not even thinking about that type of activity with children. If you are feeling better though, I mean, you'll go out and run around, horse around, roll around on the ground, and, you know, do all the things that kids love to do, and, you know, get dirty and have fun and make those kind of memories with those kids too. And I don't know, I'm not saying that you can't put a price tag on that, you know, because obviously there is a number that for everybody that it's like, no, that's a crazy amount of money. I can't handle that. But, you know, think about, like, where are your priorities? And like you said, you know, if you're going out, you know, drinking every night or smoking or doing, you know, all the things that are not good for you, but you keep doing those things cost money too, but you somehow are prioritizing those things, those things that don't have a positive impact on your life. So, you know, why not, you know, cut those things out, save a little bit, and then now you have a little bit of money that you can put towards, you know, something beneficial for your not only you, your life, but your family as well.
Yeah. You nailed it. You nailed it. And to kind of give myself a little plug, I think that's the right term. I'm now a coach, like a life fitness, health and wellness coach, whatever. We'll get to that, but focusing on trauma, but everything else. I'm starting to now coach people that need that, that to get on that right path, to see that window you're talking about. Well, do I finance the new snowmobile or do I finance stem cell therapy that can buy me happiness and longevity? You know?
Yeah,
and so the coaching, that's where the coaching comes in of like, okay, so you know, we're, what's important to you in your life? Well, my kids. Okay, so what's important to you about doing stuff here? Well, I like to wrestle with them and I want to take them out hiking and I'm fascinated. I love to hunt. I'm not a hunter. I'm not a killer, I should say. I like to hunt without killing. It's like getting outside. I want to take my kids hunting. Okay, so you're going to be able to do that in 10 years? Probably not. Well, what would it take to get you there? That's the coaching thing that I do now.
Yeah,
sure. So if anybody's interested, reach out to me. I'll help you see that. But
another thing that I want to bring up too, just because you mentioned the Joe Rogan stem cell connection there, another thing I've heard him talk a lot about is like the hyperbaric oxygen chamber and how does that work? You know, is that something that you guys work with as well, or is that like a separate thing that you guys don't touch?
Yeah, I don't have done personally. Fortunately, I don't need to. And rewinding real quick, Marcus Institute is available to all first responders and veterans. Marcus Institute for Brain Health. Marcus is Bernie Marcus, the co-founder of Home Depot. He died late last year, but he's pretty much the one that writes the check. It's all free. And it cost $85,000 to put one of us through that program.
Wow.
And it's, I mean, top level stuff, man. Remember that number, $85,000. So it is available. And then you asked about stem cells in the VA. They are doing PRP therapy now, which is generation one stem cell therapy from like the last 20 years, which is still good stuff. I got some buddies that have done their knees. So for anybody that's listening, check in with your VA clinic about PRP therapy for your joints. But the hyperbaric thing, how I got involved with that was one of my friends, he's a Marine infantryman, had some pretty good IED blasts. He did there's an organization in Florida called the 22 Project, I believe it's called.
Okay. Yep.
That they bring you in for, I think, 3 to 4 weeks down there. And you have to do multiple hyperbaric chamber sessions a day, I believe. And all it is you're just forcing that oxygen into your brain, into your body. And what they're seeing and how it repairs the soft tissue of the brain, they'll take MRI of your brain when you get there. And then when you leave, take another one. And so you could see the physical change in your brain.
Okay.
And the soft tissue that's grown. And just by getting all that oxygen in there, it's working. I have a friend that I went through the Marcus Institute with that he did psychedelics in the Marcus Institute. And he was much better. And then he went on to do some hyperbaric treatments. And he was just, like I said, we're talking about the return on the investment. He's just continuing to work on himself.
Uh-huh.
And he's seeing improvements. Idaho, I know, has a pretty good program for hyperbaric work for their vets. There's a clinic here in southern Wyoming, to the town called Rock Springs around I-80. There's a clinic there I'm working with that they're doing hyperbaric work for vets. They're also doing float tanks and stuff. But
okay.
Point being, it's getting easier to do. Mm-hmm. And the data is there, showing it works. And there's no pills. There's no surgeries. Once again, right. It's just trying to use nature to heal the body.
And that seems like it makes the most sense to me. Like, what if we have these tools available and they work, let's start using them. And, you know, yeah. I know a lot of the pushback is going to be, well, you just mentioned it costs like $85,000 and it's expensive. No doubt that makes perfect sense to me. But as time goes on and people start using this technology more and more and more, the cost will start to come down. You know, the equipment will get better and the production value, you know, they'll be able to make them cheaper and quicker and more affordable. And, you know, there's going to be demand for it. And so the more we use it, the more we'll be able to use it, I suppose, is the way to put it. You know, and that's, you see that in a lot of other industries as well as time goes on. You know, that initial prototype might be super expensive, but you know, as it becomes a mass production type thing, you can scale that down and have a lower cost and still have the same quality treatments. So that's something that, you know, hopefully in time that'll start to come down, and then places like the VA will probably be more likely to start recommending that over, you know, other treatments that maybe are not, you know, pills and and other things like that that maybe aren't the best for you. Maybe it works temporarily, but it's not the best long-term type thing. But
yeah,
you've... Those things are, I think, important tools that are available, you know?
Yeah, I can't tell you enough how frustrating and how much it makes me angry to see these guys around with these pills. I haven't taken one pill. I haven't done any of that stuff. I'm not any of that crap. And if you heard my story, surgeries and back problems and everything, and I'm hanging in there. I'm keeping it together. And I just wish these guys would find these tools out there to use them. And the hyperbaric stuff works. I have three friends that are, they're part of my group that have gone through it, and they all have great results. So it works.
Yeah. I mean, all of those things that you were mentioning, it's all like a natural way of healing. And you're not introducing these drugs and other chemicals and things into your body that really, quite frankly, don't need to be there. You know, and so you guys help out with, you know, with all that stuff. And, you know, there's other organizations out there that help out with all these things. And that's part of what we do with this show, is help shine a light on the organizations that are out there that maybe veterans are out there who need this stuff. They just don't know it exists. And so here we are, we're talking about it, and we're going to, you know, help spread the word about all the things, the stem cells, the hyperbaric, even just getting outside. You were talking about you like to go out and, you know, just hike around and do that type of thing. I mean, that's awesome. Like, because that's great for you. There might be other people who want to do that too, but you know, maybe their knees or the back or their hips, whatever, are just in too much pain and they can't do it, but they would love to if they could. Well, there's options that you can do something to help the situation that you're in. And really, I think it's that mindset shift that we were talking about. You know, what do you want? What's important to you? What do you want to invest in? Do you want to invest in the cigarettes and the booze and the stuff like that? Or do you want to invest in yourself and your well-being overall, you know, and try to help make yourself the best version of you that you can be? Yeah, sure, it's going to cost a little money. But, you know, at the end of the day, what good's the money if you can't use it, you know?
Yeah, I heard, I think it was a stem cell doc that told me, let's say that the stem cells don't work. You're out 15, 20 grand, whatever. And that's on the high end. The clinic I work with, it's $3,800 per injection. So think if your left knee bugs you, $4,000, you get an injection.
Okay.
You know, maybe you want to use both knees, but you can only afford one knee right now. So breaking it down per joint,
sure,
$4,000. Yeah. So the doc told me, a failed surgery, you can't repair. It's done. Yeah. You're done. It's over with. Okay, so you spend $10,000, $5,000, whatever, on stem cells and it doesn't work. There's no harm done to your body. You're just out $5,000, $10,000. You can go make more money. You can't repair a failed surgery.
Yeah.
That's that mindset shift. Mindset shift you're talking about.
that mindset is important. But you know, talking about mindset, you were talking about some of the mental health aspects of things too. And yeah, you had mentioned before we started recording, you know, a little bit about post-traumatic stress growth, PTSG, versus, you know, a disorder, you know, which a lot of people refer to it as. Talk to us about that a little bit and tell us how you guys kind of work with that and use that mindset, I suppose, to, you know, help folks who are struggling with this.
Yeah. And if this goes past an hour, man, I don't care. I can, you probably got plenty of time, but
yeah, no worries.
Just so you know. Yep. So I got good fortune to get involved with this group called Veterans Talking to Veterans. It's based out of Jackson, Wyoming.
Yeah.
It started with the fall of Afghanistan. Julie Elledge is the mind behind this. She's all those three-letter things, PhD, therapist stuff. She's a genius woman. Think Jordan Peterson in a 6-foot-tall blonde. She's great. She had some clients that were vets that were not doing well after the fall of Afghanistan. And she cold called the VA commissioner here in Wyoming. Say, we got a problem. Your vets are not doing good here.
Yeah.
Well, what are you going to do? Well, she's like, I always thought the best thing to do is empower veterans to help other veterans. And she just so happens she has a company where they train people to be coaches, fitness coaches, life coaches, whatever, leadership coaches. She goes, I've always thought that if we can train veterans how to deal with trauma, put them to work in their communities, literally in their communities, plus with their veterans, let them go help their people. So that's what they did. After Afghanistan, okay. 6 months after, the governor of Wyoming, Mark Gordon, funded this, and they trained a handful of coaches and put it to work. And now we're at 50 coaches as of last week, graduated another 15 recently. Mm-hmm. And it's a free program. So $8,500 to go through that training, if you were to pay it, we offer it for free with the stipulation that you then go out and do 50 sessions, one a week, with veterans in your community. Rural communities, big towns, doesn't matter. Zoom. I have people that Zoom in from all over the country. Alaska, Texas, Rhode Island. And we're coaching them to get on that good path. Growth, healing, mentoring. So we find those vets that have kind of gone down their journey, are now in a better place. So they can use their experiences to help others that are not that far along their path. And so we're trained to work with, just to find the good in that person and coach them to get on a good path. We don't tell them how to do it. We don't hold their hand. We kind of just nudge or crack a door open and coach them through that door. And post-traumatic stress is not a disorder. We've been dealing with trauma since we were throwing crap at each other in trees. I mean, and there's monkeys. You know, it's in our DNA. We've been going to war since we could make a weapon, throw a rock. War is nothing new. So dealing with trauma is nothing new. The body knows how to deal with it. The post-traumatic stress is the body's reaction to a survival mechanism. If you're an EMT and you walk up to your first car wreck on the side of the road and you're putting gloves on, your hands are shaking so much you can't get the glove on. If you're a brand new private and you're stacking on a door for the first time, kicking doors in, what am I supposed to do? Which way do I go? Six, seven hits later, everybody's just not even talking anymore. That's the body dealing with the trauma. The problem is that stuff's just layers and layers and stacks over the years. And we don't do anything about it. Our society doesn't promote health and wellness, whatever you want to call it, processing trauma. They don't think that way. It's just shut up and you're right along.
Yeah, right.
So what, trying to break down that stigma, that's part of the Governor Gordon's mental health challenge, because Wyoming's number one for suicide in the country. We have the most suicides in all the states.
Wow.
And so he was already doing work in this field. And so that's why he brought DTV on and started putting us to work. And it's not a disorder. It literally is a survival mechanism. There's nothing to be ashamed about having post-traumatic stress and to have the anger, have the depression, have the negative thoughts, whatever it is that's happening. Just understand that this is part of your body processing all that crap that we've dealt with, whether you're a cop, a homeschool mom that's got 15 kids running around, or you're a veteran, doesn't matter. It's trauma is trauma.
Yeah, right.
So we're trying to teach these guys and gals to process it, talk about it, get it out of the system. And what Veterans Talking to Veterans is about is we bring together groups of our like-minded people once a week, and we literally use mythological stories. I know it sounds weird. I was like, what are we doing here? We're telling stories about kings and queens and Dungeons and Dragons. What's going on? All that is a story that does not trigger your thoughts, your bad stuff in there. Like, hey, tell me that time in Baghdad when you were ambushed and half your team was killed. This story sparks that thought process, and then we ask questions that spark the conversation. It gets that conversation going. Then if they want to talk about stuff and bring stuff up, it's on them, and we're there to support them. And it's not just me, the coach, it's your peers. Everybody can relate. Everybody's been through similar crap. And so that guy that may want to open up about something that's bugging him, there's somebody else in the room that's been there and can support him.
Right.
So now that guy feels like he's helping somebody. And this guy has a little bump because, man, I'm not alone. Other people have gone through this too. Holy crap. And he's doing good. I guess I'll listen to him and do what he did and I'll get better.
Yeah, sure.
And then next week that flips. This guy's not having a good week, but this guy can relate. Well, hey, man, I used to drink a lot. I know where you're at. This is what I did to fix it. And bam. So now everybody's helping each other.
Great. Yeah.
And the number one thing is we're empowering veterans to help each other. And then there's a tragedy in their community. We had a couple suicides here at my town the last 6 months with first responders. We went to work. We brought all our coaches in from around the state. We went to work here in the community for 2 days. We brought in all the religious leaders, education leaders, fire, EMS, the sheriff's office, leadership from them. We brought them in and we worked with them on how do you grow? How do you heal from this? When trauma happens, how you recover from that is grow, is healing.
Yeah.
Writing your book, telling your story, everything you've done, to honor your family, that's growth. Think of how much you've grown from that.
Sure.
So when you provide those tools to that community, to that individual, how to grow, how to coach them, mentor them, that gets them on that right path, plants those seeds that then you can let them grow and then walk with them as they do that. And so we just had a tragedy here in Wyoming. It's on the news, so I'll talk about it. It happened in early March. A young mom was dealing with postpartum depression, and back to the pills. They gave her pill after pill after pill, and nothing worked. So they then put her on ketamine. She then murdered, just killed her four kids, and then herself. And two of them were in cribs.
Wow.
And I think the other ones, I think the oldest one was like 12. I think it was like 3, 4, and 9, and 12. Two were hers, and two were stepkids. She was not obviously in a clear mind. She was.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's pharmaceuticals, man. That's all our conversation. So we just got back from an event up in that area last week where we brought 15 coaches in again from around the state. We're all volunteers. We do it on our own dime. And same thing. We work with the kids in the community. And this is how you communicate with your mom's dads and the policemen and the firemen. And this is how you respect and honor those in your community that take care of your community. And so it was a good two-day event. And once again, it empowers us veterans that need that purpose in life, that need that drive, that focus to go out and help our fellow vets and first responders and our communities.
Yeah, and that makes the communities just that much better. When you have a bunch of folks who actually give a shit about what's going on in their community and they do something about it, instead of just being bystanders, just letting life happen to them and their communities, for that matter, and seeing everything that you maybe just drive by a place that you see something is not the way you think it should be, and you just kind of bitch about it and maybe make a comment to your spouse or whatever. But you can actually do something about it. Like you see something that's wrong, you can go and try to fix it. I'm not going to say that you're going to be successful every single time, but you can give it a shot, right? And that action of doing something is helpful in and of itself, because you now feel like you have a purpose, right? And even if it's just in that moment, you know, you're doing something to help somebody else. And, you know, sure, that makes that other person feel good because somebody's helping them, but got to make you feel good too. If you're able to provide a benefit to somebody else, just out of the goodness of your heart, not because it's your job and you have to or anything. It's just because you're a good person and you want to see other people successful, not getting into other trouble. You know, if you're helping somebody out, it's probably because they need the help. And so you want to help them get out of whatever pit they might be in that given moment. And so when you're able to pull someone out of that, you know, it kind of feels good that you're able to do that. And it gives you that little, maybe a hit of dopamine, if you will, you know, natural feel good chemical. And, you know, helps you push on to that, through that next hard thing that you might be dealing with, right?
Yeah. Thriving is the word. Thriving and connection are the two words we really hit.
Sure. Yeah.
The number one way to reduce suicide is connection. Is people are not connected. They feel like they've lost touch with, no one can relate to them, whatever. So we try to connect with them and show them that, hey, you're not alone. You're not lost. Come with me. Mm-hmm. And then when you create those thriving communities, those thriving relationships, they just grow. Back to the growth. You just provide that. You literally just have to build that foundation in there to help them grow and start. It's all here. But guys like us, we don't join the military because we're bored and we're not trying to achieve things. You know, we're driven. That's who we are. We were naturally drawn to help people as well. So Julie Elledge's vision of this is fascinating to watch it come true, because she saw that veterans and first responders were naturally doing this already. It's who they are. They naturally want to help people. So you empower them to use their experiences that we don't want to talk about. You know, people don't want to hear our horror stories. They don't want to hear, you know, we're afraid to talk about that. It's hard to relate to our communities. It's hard to relate to the civilians. But if you give them the tools on how you can use your experiences to now help others, like you said, to provide support, you feel good about yourself. And then when we do these weekly meetings, I'll have to send you a link, man. You come check one out. It's pretty cool. You provide that support, or you facilitate that meeting. The support comes from their peers. I just start the conversation and then I step back. Someone speaks like, "Hey, I mean, I know what you're going through. I was there one day too." Quick story. We had a gal call in who's I put it without breaking any kind of code of conduct, an elite level skier. 1% of the one, like David Goggins has that line of the uncommon among the uncommon. That's her. Like, holy cow. And so she calls into my meetings, and she had a pretty big tragedy in her circle where an avalanche took out a pretty good group of skiers recently.
Oh, wow.
Some of her friends, you know, whatever. And this provided her a spot to speak, because we're used to losing friends. We're used to losing a lot of people at one time in this traumatic avalanche event. Man, within seconds, the veterans are comparing an avalanche to a battle damage assessment. They're comparing patrolling through an avalanche, looking for the bodies of the search, looking for parts and pieces, to using a metal detector, patrolling back to their base in Afghanistan, looking for landmines. I mean, the theme of the night was parallels, because they were paralleling the first responder who's never been to war, but has this terrible tragedy, the veterans, and within seconds, they meshed. And then they were talking about how the helicopter pilot is now dealing with survivor guilt, because he flew away. He saw the avalanche coming, had to pull off, went and picked up the people he just, so there's eight, man. There's two groups. They took one group back to the parking lot, whatever. Flew back to the second group. Avalanche happened. Had to pull away. Went back and got some of those people to come back and start the search. That pilot now has survivor guilt, because he thinks he should have sat down and started searching to save lives. So the veterans in the group were like, how do we get this pilot from other side of the world to join our meeting so he can realize this is not survivor guilt, man. You did the right thing.
Yeah,
secondary ambushes, follow-on attacks, secondary IEDs. Like, they were like, this is why we don't do, you know, the vets and the first responders.
Yeah.
So once again, you're empowering the vet to help others. And then in this group setting, they get to support each other and they feel like they help somebody for a change.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating to sit back and watch it happen.
And it seems like it's mutually beneficial, because when that other person is having a rough time, then that group can help that person as well. And it just, again, the community, the connection, the people that you were talking about is important. You need to have that in your day-to-day life. And a lot of times we don't do that. We just isolate ourselves and we don't talk to people. We don't do things out in public. We just kind of become hermits and we trap ourselves in. And that's not the way to go either. So, you know, I think these are extraordinarily important things that you are doing, because when you have groups of people that otherwise just be kind of on their own floating around, you know, eventually you start to see people losing hope, and that's where you start to see these suicides coming in. And it's just, spirals
right down,
and it's like going right down the drain. And that's not where we want people to be. We want people to be thriving and happy and healthy and without pain in their bodies. We want to get rid of those things. And it seems like that's everything that you guys are touching on. And those things are, I mean, all encompassing, important to the overall well-being of someone. And gosh, that's just a great opportunity for somebody to get involved with what you guys are doing, and, you know, pull themselves or help getting pulled out of that ditch that they're finding themselves in. You know, some people, they don't see the light even at the end of the tunnel. And, you know, if you can help them along the way and show them that, hey, it's just right around the bend. There is light there. It's maybe dim right now, but you can get there. And there is a way to do that through community, through, you know, the help that organizations like yours, you know, Overwatch 6 can provide and just helping people get back on the right path. And that's I think is super important. For the listeners who are interested in what it is that you do, interested in some of the things that we were talking about, where can they go to find out more information about Overwatch 6 and, you know, any of the other things that we were talking about?
Overwatch 6 is just that simple, overwatch6.com. You'll see my shooting stuff on there, and then the event that Knuckle Dragger was telling you about. That'll be on there soon. That happens in July, which I'm obviously not going to know about, but it'll happen again hopefully next July.
Sure.
We'll have to come back and tell you how that went.
Yeah, absolutely.
That, you can reach just Chris at overwatch6.com. You can get a hold of me if you want to talk personally one-on-one about what we're talking about. As far as the veterans talking to veterans go, what state are you in? Where are you located?
I'm in Arizona.
Okay, so we just signed a contract with New Mexico. I think Arizona's not too far away. So
okay.
Wyoming's doing good. Idaho's on is gun. We're training our second block there. Rhode Island's any day now. New Mexico, we're starting training soon. And other states are quickly jumping on board.
Excellent.
So if you're a vet and you want to do this coaching thing, you want to be a coach, call your VA commissioner. Find out who that VA commissioner is in your state. I guarantee you they've heard about this program. I know they have. Tell them you want to bring it to your community and you want to be a coach. If you want to come to a meeting, once again, you can reach out to me, or you have that link there. I think I left you with the Veterans Talking to Veterans website. And we have Zoom links. You could Zoom in. I had a 2 weeks ago, I had a guy from Alaska, two or three men and women from Texas, and one from Rhode Island, and everything in between. So,
okay.
You know, people are calling from all over. And I had a young Marine, like 27-year-old Marine who just got out, to a Vietnam vet, and everything in between, special operations, a cook, everybody. And everybody has a blast. It gets a lot.
That's great. One thing I've noticed with this show is that when I have a guest on the show, very often, like you and I right now, prior to us getting on this call and to record, we hadn't met in person. We haven't, you know, chatted, you know, prior to this, you know, to any great extent or anything, you know, other than, you know, a few minutes before we started recording. But, you know, by the end of the conversation, you know, there's a little bit of that camaraderie that's built up. And this is, you know, a relatively short conversation, you know, in the grand scheme of things. And, you know, you have these conversations with people, you start to form connections and you start to form bonds with people. And, you know, maybe some of them, you know, some of the people you're not 100% connected with, and that's fine. But you're going to find your people, and you're going to find people that are people who have things in common with you. And, you know, all veterans have something in common, at least, right? And some will have other things that are in common with you as well. And then you'll make those connections, and you'll start to learn about each other and, you know, find your tribe, your community, your fire team, whatever you want to call it. You're going to find it, and you just have to put yourself out there and kind of look for them. If you don't do that, you're not going to find it. So this is incredible work that you guys are doing. I will definitely have those links, everything that you mentioned in the show notes, because I definitely want people to get involved. And, you know, like you said, if there's not something in their area, they can make it happen. You know, it's something that can be done if enough people want it to happen. So, you know, definitely reach out to those folks and, you know, make sure that you get it in your area if that's something that you think is important for you and importantly your community as well. So, you know, Chris, thank you so much again for coming on the show. It's really been a pleasure learning about your background, your experience, but also, you know, all the stuff that is going on with Overwatch 6 and other organizations that are out there that can help veterans. It's just been a pleasure speaking with you. So thank you so much.
Like I said, thank you for all you're doing, Scott. Thank you for having me, and keep up the good work, man.
Appreciate it.
You're changing lives.
I hope so. Thanks again.